And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What?
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is potpourri. Each of my guests is discussing an interesting topic, no two of which are alike. My next guest is a PhD that proselytizes the end of full employment in the United States and what it means to us. We'll discuss his book, Work's New Age. And if you want to join in the conversation or if you want to ask a question, you can call us at 639-0008. Dr. James B. Huntington has been a professor, a teacher, and a professional speaker. His 2007 doctoral thesis is the only book written on career jobs for post-65 baby boomers. He has also written on leadership, organizational change, and human development. Dr. Huntington has a BA in sociology from the University of Wisconsin at Milwaukee, an MBA from the University of Phoenix, and a PhD in applied management and decision sciences from Walden University. Joining us from the great state of New York. Hi, James. How are you today?
Good morning, Bill. It's a pleasure to talking with you and your listeners.
Well, thank you for being our guest, and it couldn't be more timely because the new unemployment statistics came out for November of 2011, and the figures they were a little bit interesting, mixed, shall we say. Non-farm payrolls were up 120,000. That means there was an increase of 140,000 private sector jobs and a decrease of 20,000 government sector jobs. Unemployment is now down to 8.6%, down from 9%, and that's the lowest level that it's been since March of 2009. It's not where we'd like to be, but it's certainly moving in the right direction. You, on the other hand, assert that we will never see the halcyon days of 3 and 4% unemployment. So tell me, why is the connection between workers available and the work needed changed permanently here in the United States?
Well, Bill, you see, the way it works is there are two major factors. One is automation, which is getting more and more extreme. Any job which uses linear logic, if this, then that, is in danger to be taken over by machines. The second large factor is globalization, which has reached the point where Americans are just too expensive. There are also a string of smaller other factors, and almost all of them are in the direction of fewer and fewer jobs as time goes on.
All right. Now, you say American workers are too expensive. By that, you mean our salaries are high, the benefits that we have to pay, and government-mandated programs and the like cause our cost of labor to be higher than, say, that of China. But China is facing the same problem. While China used to be the low-cost leader in manufacturing in the 1990s and 2000s, all of a sudden, their middle class is getting larger. They're starting to see wage increases, and work is shifting to Vietnam, Myanmar, Laos, and places like that where the cost of labor is even lower. So I understand the globalization thing. Talk to me about both of automation and globalization and why that's going to mean fewer and fewer American jobs.
Well, automation, people cost more money than machines. They're less reliable. And they can't work as much. They can't work nearly as much. Technology is improving to the point where robots and computers, especially, can do more and more things that had remarkably recently been done by human beings. Now, the innovation, some people will say that what we need is the next big thing, the next car industry, the next railroad, the next electricity, but we have those things, and they're not helping jobs very much. You think about the great innovations of recent years, Twitter, which tens of millions use. Twitter has 300 employees. Technology keeps improving, and more jobs are going away permanently. The technology is going to continue to march on no matter what economic times are like. Fewer and fewer human workers will be needed.
All right. Well, you touched on a couple of interesting new technologies, but I want to go back and talk about two in particular, where the United States leads. One is biotech. We're fortunate to have Amgen here in Ventura County, one of the largest, if not the largest, biotech company in the world. And that's an area that the United States currently leads in. The other is green technology. And while we don't lead in green technology, we're certainly a player there. These are all opportunities to hire people at every level, from senior management to scientists, down to clerical people that are going to need to grow these companies. And both green technology and biotech are going to be around for a while because our population is aging and our supply of oil is dwindling. What do you say to that?
Correct. They are good industries, good fields to get into if you have a scientific bent or ability and interest in those things. However, as far as being large national employers that can make a significant dent in our employment situation, the numbers just aren't there. Those industries you mentioned would probably do well nationally to employ 1 or 2 million people for the entire country. The auto industry was 5 and 10 million in its peak, and the country was much smaller.
Well, that was definitely during its heyday. But you look at how many people that ExxonMobil employs in the United States, both on the production side and on the exploration side. That is a large, large company. And if you extrapolate that green technology will eventually replace the ExxonMobils of the world, why doesn't it stand to reason that the employment of green technology will replace the employment of ExxonMobil?
Well, for one thing, your green technology and your biotech are both, of course, new industries. They are going to be put together from the beginning with low levels of labor. There are going to be most of the systems in them are going to be automated. So what will you need that many people to do in either one?
All right. Well, I think time will tell on that. My guest is Dr. James Huntington, author of the book Work's New Age, The End of Full Employment and What It Means to You. Now, another study that just came out, interestingly enough, around the same time for our interview, according to a study that was released today by the John Heldrich Center for Workforce Development at Rutgers University, just 7% of those who lost jobs during the financial crisis have returned to or exceeded their previous financial position and maintained their lifestyle. What are the implications of this study, plus the lingering unemployment figures, for the American way of life, particularly for the middle-class American way of life?
Yes, I read that story. That was quite an item. I was going to bring that up on this show if you didn't. Yes, only 7%. So much for people getting out of one job and getting into a comparably well-paying or responsible career. These people are taking a decrease. Well, the time of there being vast numbers of middle-class Americans is endangered. The backbone of the large middle class, which really has been a phenomenon only since World War II, it's all based on people having good jobs where they can raise families and support themselves and save money and advance themselves in other ways. And it's just simply true that if people cannot sell their labor, and especially not at good wages and benefits, we will not have the kind of middle class that we have had before.
And so what are the implications as you project that forward, James, for middle class America, but not also for our economy?
Well, what is already happening, a number of trends have come through. We've seen, first of all, the Occupy Wall Street and the other Occupy protests. These have no reason to end. The protesters are going to go back to no jobs. Second, one thing is the working ages are shrinking. People used to work in the olden days when I was a child and such. People were expected to work from 21 to 65. Now it's getting shorter on both ends, and we're coming in quickly on 30 to 50 being the working ages. People in their 20s are living with their parents longer. They're not getting established in what we consider the basic ways, getting married, having children, getting full-time jobs, having places of their own. They're not doing these things because there's very little demand for them in the job market. And on the other end, people beyond 50, many would like to work and are not being able to. Another staggering statistic for you is that unemployed people who are 55 and over have been out for an average of longer than a year. They are going to be categorized as involuntarily retired. And unlike the people in their 20s, we don't know what people over 50 who can't find jobs are going to do with themselves, and it's a real problem. So those are two. Those are two of several social changes that have happened.
Well, there's certainly mega problems. My guest is Dr. James Huntington. And James, politicians are very much divided on how to solve the unemployment crisis. On the one hand, you have the progressives who want to increase the minimum wage. They want to extend unemployment benefits. And they want to return to more unionized sort of society to boost employment. Conservatives, on the other hand, want lower taxes to stimulate new business hiring, new business formulation. Why do both sides, in your opinion, have it wrong in terms of the prescribed prescriptions for unemployment?
Well, Bill, those were some good examples of things that are generally wrong. Yes, the minimum wage will serve only to pressure employers. Well, to make it quick, the liberals are wrong because, first, the problem is not inequality. It's people who can't support themselves by working.
Explain.
Also, business is not at fault, and tying up companies, putting more restrictions on them, requiring them to pay more money, more benefits, more health insurance, what have you, is not the answer.
All right. So I get that part of it. So what about the taxation? What about reducing income taxes and or reducing the corporate tax rate?
What I support is reducing taxes on companies who maintain and create American jobs. Beyond that, such things as cutting the income tax rates in general don't really make any sense. The reason is that companies have a great deal of money. It's getting scary. If you look at the balance sheets of some of our large companies, they're getting to look like some of those of banks. They have so much cash, they don't have anything very good to do with it because interest rates are poor and business opportunities are poor. They're not going to help employment. They have plenty of money to hire people, but they're acting rationally. They're acting according to their own standards, and they just don't see business opportunities. Because fewer and fewer people have money to spend, and markets don't work, and companies can't stay in business unless people have money to spend.
Well, that's rather dire. Another take on that is, aren't businesses just being conservative, waiting to see what the political and the economic landscape are going to be down the road? There's too much uncertainty, and that's why balance sheets are showing a hoarding of cash, as you just alluded to. It's because people don't know what the future is going to bring. They don't know what things like Obamacare is going to mean to them as employers, so they're holding off to wait until some of this uncertainty settles.
Well, businesses, like Americans in general, don't think that far out. I hear some Republicans saying that the deficit is causing companies to not hire people, but the companies do not see that far out. Companies see 1 and 2 years into the future. And if they have a business opportunity now, they're going to jump on it. They're not going to say, no, I'm not sure it will be maintained. They can hire people on a short term. They can hire temporary workers in some form. They can get business efforts going in with a year or two looking out. So I don't buy at all that companies are worried about what's going to be happening in the likes of 2015 and 2020, or for that matter, even in the first year of the next presidential term. They don't see that far out. They don't have to.
All right. Well, now another question more from the progressive side of things. Doesn't extending unemployment benefits in your scenario really seem futile and a waste of taxpayer money in light of your thesis that we're never going to return to full employment? So just extending somebody's unemployment benefits puts them on the dole forever because they're never going to get hired again.
No, I think extending and increasing unemployment benefits is a good thing. The main reason is it's a first-rate stimulus. Remember, Obama's stimulus of $800-some billion, where over 90% of it came right back to the Treasury? Well, that's what happens with unemployment benefits. They go to people in general who don't have money to spend otherwise. The people spend them. They don't save them. And it goes back circulating right through the economy. So not only does it help people who generally are doing what they can to find jobs and not getting them, but it helps stimulate the economy and create jobs in the just as well.
Well, I certainly see it putting money into the hands of people that will go out and spend it on things like groceries, gas, et cetera, but doesn't that just then create an entire class of people who are dependent on the government dole? Who, because you project that there's not going to be that much employment in the United States anymore, these people are going to be permanently with their hand out expecting the government to help them up.
Well, we are stuck with that problem anyway, and it is true that unemployment benefits, when they are increased and lengthened, do decrease employment, and they do have a negative effect on incentive, but that effect is just dwarfed by the lack of jobs. Right now, we are talking about 14 million people officially unemployed, 9 million people who are working part-time who would like to work to full-time but can't find it, and another 9 million people who are unofficially unemployed but would work if they had a chance. That's a total of 32 million Americans are looking for jobs, and numbers like that are not going to be wiped out by giving them fewer benefits.
All right. My guest is Dr. James Huntington, author of the book Work's New Age, The End of Full Employment and What It Means to You. So give us some idea of what are some possible solutions to this conundrum.
Okay, good ideas. The first line of good ideas are, first, a WPA-style infrastructure jobs project. We have roads and bridges and computer systems and airports and many things that are deteriorating in this country. If you see a lot of similar things in other developed countries, you'll see that the United States is really falling behind. As far as the money to do it and the labor, it's never going to be cheaper than it is now. Materials costs are down, labor costs are down. The country could use a large project like this. And again, as with the unemployment benefits, it would be a first-rate stimulus. Hire unemployed people and put them to work. I mean, one thing most of us don't realize is that each percentage point of unemployment in the United States costs the federal government $400 billion a year. Given that, nobody is getting off free with the situation like it is now. So yes, it would cost money for government to hire people, but it would do a lot of good things, many, many good things that aren't going to be done otherwise. And that would also give them jobs.
Well, now, what would you say, though, to the fact that government is not a good spender of money? Let's face it, the government doesn't know how to allocate money efficiently, and while the WPA may have worked in the 1930s, we're a different country than we are today with different unionization rules, different things in place that would make it more difficult for the government to spend that money wisely.
Well, we would have to choose. We would have to come up with good ways of choosing what is important. There, it certainly can be done. Well, I hate to say this with their 23% approval rating, but Congress is supposed to be representing the interests of the people, and they should be able, in theory anyway, in the House and the Senate, to get together and determine what is worthy and what is not, and what is most important.
All right, and we're going to have to leave it there. My guest has been Dr. James Huntington, author of the book Work's New Age, The End of Full Employment and What It Means to You. James, if people want to learn more about you, want to learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Yes, you can go on Amazon, including the Kindle version. You can go to BarnesandNoble.com, including the Nook version. You can go to any bookstore. If they don't have it on the shelves, you can special order it. Or on my own website, which also has a lot of information about these and related issues. The website is the same as the book title, worksnewage.com. That's worksnewage.com. Or you can call me at a toll-free number to order the book, and using any payment method, it's 800-660-6210. Those are www.worksnewage.com and 800-660-6210.
James, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming. We'll talk to you down the road.
And thank you.
Take care.